Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. We're going to return our attention back to the book of Isaiah, chapter number 17, where we have a mention about the destruction, the obliteration of Damascus. Chapter 17, verse 1 says, "An oracle concerning Damascus, behold, Damascus will cease to be a city, and will become a heap of ruins." Now, Damascus has the distinction of being the longest continually inhabited city on the planet. And so it has never been obliterated up to this point in history, which means that this passage is yet to be fulfilled. And since we are here waiting for the second coming of Jesus at the end of the 3.5 years described in Book of Daniel, Book of Revelation as the day of the Lord, my guess is that Damascus will suffer some sort of horrendous fate shortly before the day of the Lord, or perhaps during some of the events of the day of the Lord. But here, it is mentioned because the Assyrians are going to come through, and they're going to take it over. They are going to take it under captivity. So we have that thing that we see from time to time in Scripture, where places that suffer multiple fulfillments of God's judgment, sometimes we have all of that mentioned in the exact same spot. Verse 2, "The cities of Aroer are deserted. They'll be for flocks, which will lie down, and none will make them afraid." Aroer is farther south from Damascus. It's on the east side of the Jordan Valley. It's in modern Kingdom of Jordan. And as the Syrians come through, it would be one of the places that would be desolated by them. And so that's probably why it's mentioned here. The fortress will disappear from Ephraim. Remember, Ephraim is northern Israel. We don't know exactly when Isaiah made all of his prophecies. We're kind of doing this set here because it has several mentions of Egypt and Babylon, which we're kind of talking about in a other context of our timing here. And so we know that Assyria swept through, and the fortresses in Ephraim, northern Israel, they did disappear. The kingdom from Damascus, that's where we started this section, and the remnants of Syria will be like the glory of the children of Israel, declares he who is of the hosts, the armies. So northern Israel, that's tied in with the children of Israel. The glory of the children of Israel is going to be gone. I mean, it's going to be taken down. And so Damascus, the areas of Moab, all of the east side of the Jordan Valley, the Dead Sea Valley zone, all of that, the Assyrians are going to take down. In that day, the glory of Jacob will be brought low, so judgment. The fat of his flesh will grow lean. When you have military invasions, there is a lack of food. And the side that's losing typically is going to have people starving, losing body mass. That's described here. "It shall be as when the reaper gathers standing grain, and his arm harvests the ears, as when one gleans the ears of grain in the valley of Rephaim." Now, the valley of Rephaim is a valley that stretches from the southwest side of the city of Jerusalem down toward the southwest. And it was known as a grain production area. But when you go through and harvest your fields, once you're done, only the gleanings will be left, meaning the things that got dropped. and that the poor people are going to get. And so it is a small portion of the larger group. Again, that's the idea here, is that as the judgment of God falls, as the Assyrians first, later the Babylonians come through, there's not going to be an awful lot of people left. Verse 6, gleanings will be left in it, as when an olive tree is beaten, two or three berries on the top of the highest bough, four or five on the branches of the fruit tree, declares he who is God of Israel. And that imagery was used once before, maybe a couple of times before, about this same topic. When you harvest the olive tree, you put some sort of catching fabric underneath it, and then you just wail on the branches with a club, and the ripe olive berries drop. The ones that are not quite ripe, they stick to their position, but they're few because you pick the peak of ripeness in order to do this harvest. So the point is, as the judgment, specifically of Assyria, then later of Babylon, sweeps through the lower Middle East, sweeps through Israel and Syria and Moab and Judah, that there's not going to be a ton of people left. Verse number 7. In that day, man will look to his Maker, and his eyes will look on the Holy One of Israel. So this is going to cause people to rethink their relationship with God, because it's been communicated to them through prophets like Isaiah. The reason all these things are happening is because of your sin, because of your idolatry. And so the idea of this judgment is to get people to repent, to change the way they're thinking, which should change the way they're acting. So the concept that Isaiah is bringing out here is that people will get their act together eventually. Verse 8, he will not look to the altars, the work of his hands. He will not look on what his own fingers have made, either the Asherim or the altars of incense. So this is all the components of idolatry, the making of idols, the making of shrines for those idols, temples for those idols, altars for those idols. Once God's judgment sweeps through, the Israelis at some point are going to come to their senses and they're going to quit engaging in idolatry. Now, it would appear that the majority of Israelis historically stayed away from idolatry once the Maccabee revolution took place in the 2nd century BC. In fact, they kind of swung the pendulum the other way, where any statue, any artwork was not allowed because God said, don't make images. And so they kind of overcorrect. And we can see that in some of the historical documents right around the time of the birth of the church and Jesus' ministry. So yes, we're looking at here prophecies that idolatry is finally going to be fixed among the Israeli people. Verse 9, in that day their strong cities will be like the deserted places of the wooded heights and the hilltops, which they deserted because of the children of Israel, and there will be desolation. Again, the emptying of the land. For you have forgotten the God of your salvation, and have not remembered the rock of your refuge. And therefore, though you plant pleasant plants, and sow the vine branch of a stranger, though you make them grow on the day that you plant them, and make them blossom in the morning that you sow, yet the harvest will flee away in a day of grief and incurable pain. So again, part of the judgment scenario is, because you've blown God off, because you've quit worshiping Him in the way that you committed to as part of the covenant way back at the time of Moses, doesn't matter how much effort you put into planting and tending the crops, you're not going to get a harvest out of it. Not sufficient, because that's part of the curse. Remember, the book of Deuteronomy kind of wraps up with the idea that God was offering them blessings if they stick with the covenant, curses if they don't. And that included the way that agriculture worked. Ah, the thunder of many peoples. They thunder like the thundering of the sea. Ah, the roar of nations. They roar like the roaring of mighty waters. This is often a description of approaching armies, is that they're making a big noise. I mean, you got people moving in a large group. They got equipment with them. They're armored. And it makes a racket. And it's at a distance. Sometimes it's a little bit like the thunder, a little bit like the crashing of the surf. The nations roar like the roaring of many waters, but he will rebuke them, and they will flee far away, chased like chaff on the mountains before the wind, and whirling dust before the storm. Now, this is another one of those places where God gives a little bit of hope in the midst of judgment talk, that there is the time that God could step in and put an end to the invaders. And it does happen when there is repentance, when there is a calling out to the Lord. Many instances of it in the Bible history up to this point, and many more that follow. At evening time, behold, terror! Before morning, they're no more. This is the portion of those who loot us and the lot of those who plunder us. The commentary by Isaiah that if God steps in, the other side is going to be obliterated. Even though they're strong and make a lot of noise, if God decides that they can't invade, they can't invade. Chapter number 18. And remember, there are no chapter and verse divisions in the ancient book. Those were added for convenience sake by Bible students through the centuries. And so sometimes I think they are a little bit abrupt, and they make us forget that this whole section is all about judgment. And so here's a little bit more. Verse 1 of chapter 18. Ah, land of whirring wings that is beyond the rivers of Cush. Now that's our New American English Standard Version. It represents the Hebrew word here, Cush. And Cush historically is applied to Ethiopia. Southern Nile, Nile River region. So we're not exactly sure what is in mind here. My guess is that we may be talking about people groups past Ethiopia on the river, down toward Lake Victoria. I'll explain why I think that in just a moment. So, which sends ambassadors by the sea, or the word is yam, and it can be a reference to a big water, like a large lake, in vessels of papyrus on the waters. Reed boats were an ancient construction for river traffic and lake traffic and even coastal ocean traffic. So in Africa, there was a lot of that. And so we do seem to be talking about Africa, Nile area. Go, you swift messengers to a nation, don't think country, don't think a government. The word is goi, and then when it gets into the Greek Old Testament, it's ethnos, It's the idea of ethnicity. So go to an ethnic group that is tall and smooth, to a people feared near and wide, a nation mighty and conquering, whose land the rivers divide. Now, down by Lake Victoria, the extreme southern starting point for the Nile River system, we have some of the tallest African ethnic groups. Very dark black in their skin tone, very smooth in that skin tone as well, and pretty tall for the time period. There are some stories of people up into their 7-foot range. And so maybe that's the region that we're talking about here, is that these guys on the extreme southern end of the the Nile River system are going to be sending ambassadors north. By the way, I almost skipped over the whirring wings part at the beginning of the chapter. I think that might be a reference to the repeating locust plagues that are known to be up and down this part of Africa. The locusts, when they fly, are whirring with their wings. They make that great big loud noise. Okay, verse 3. All you inhabitants of the world, you who dwell on the earth, when a signal is raised in the mountains, look. When a trumpet is blown, hear. For thus he who is said to me, I will quietly look from my dwelling like clear heat in sunshine, like a cloud of dew in the heat of harvest. So God is going to be watching what's going on. Are they repenting? Or are they continuing the rebellion? For before the harvest, when the blossom is over, and the flower becomes a ripening grape, he cuts off the shoots with pruning hooks, and the spreading branches he lops and off and clears away. They shall all of them be left to the birds of prey of the mountains and to the beasts of the earth, and the birds of prey will summer on them, and all the beasts of the earth will winter on them. So apparently we're talking about some sort of clipping, some sort of pruning that God is doing through his judgment here. At that time, tribute will be brought to he who is of the hosts, from a people tall and smooth, from a people feared near and far, a nation mighty and conquering, whose land the rivers divide, to Mount Zion, the place of the name of he who is of the hosts. Now that part sounds much more like the time when Jesus comes to the throne at his second coming, where he becomes King of Kings, Lord of Lords on the new earth, and people are streaming to Jerusalem area in order to worship him, to have relationship with him. And so we know from other passages that the two ends of the highway of holiness are described as coming out of Assyria up in the north and out of Egypt down in the south. And when we think of Egypt, you should probably think of his extended connections along the Nile River basin, which goes deep down into Ethiopia and beyond. Multiple heads, multiple sources for the Nile River system, connected to the Lake Victoria region. So the very place that we were just talking about. And so I think that Jesus is in mind here, receiving tribute from deep down in the Nile River system. Chapter 19 continues with an oracle concerning Egypt. So that's been the context recently, is talking about Egypt. Behold, he who is riding on a swift cloud and comes to Egypt. Now, some of the imagery from other countries, other ethnic groups, during this time period, have their god, like Ashur, riding on a cloud, flying all over the place. And so here is God portraying himself in that same way. He is the God being transported on a cloud to come and judge Egypt. The idols of Egypt will tremble at his presence, and the heart of the Egyptians will melt within them. So God is coming in judgment. And I will stir up Egyptians against Egyptians. They will fight each against another, each against his neighbor, city against city, kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of the Egyptians within them will be emptied out. And I will confound their counsel, and they will inquire of the idols and the sorcerers and the mediums and the necromancers. And I will give over the Egyptians into the hand of a hard master, and a fierce king will rule over them, declares he who is the God of hosts. The Egyptians, there's a group that is ethnically Egyptian. Let's start with that. But the Egyptians as a larger group are made up of a whole bunch of ethnicities up and down the Nile River system. And so when problems come, when turmoil arises, those ethnic groups break up and start fighting against each other. And so with the Assyrians coming first, and then later it'll be the Babylonians, and then it'll be the Medes and the Persians, then it'll be the Greeks, then it'll be the Romans. The Egyptians, made up all these different ethnic groups, will fight against each other, but they'll end up coming under the boot of a fierce king. And actually, that's true several times in history. And the waters of the sea will be dried up, and the river will be dry and parched, and its canals will become foul, and the branches of Egypt's Nile will diminish and dry up. Reeds and rushes will rot away. When God strikes the weather system in the Lake Victoria region, down in the heart of Africa, it screws up the water system of the Nile, and you don't get the inundation that was important to their agriculture. You end up with a lowered water table, and things go bad in Egypt. And so this seems to be that sort of prediction, is that God was going to affect the Nile water system. And this would be a strike upon all of those ethnic groups up and down the Nile. There will be bare places by the Nile, on the brink of the Nile, and all that is sown on the Nile will be parched, will be driven away, and will be no more. The fishermen will mourn and lament, all who cast a hook in the Nile, they will languish who spread nets on the water. The flooding of the Nile every year, like clockwork, also helped the fish harvest, not just simply the plant harvest. And so if you screw up the water system up and down the Nile, the fishermen are not going to do well. The workers in combed flax will be in despair. The weavers of white cotton. So you got to grow the crops that you make your fabrics from. Those who are the pillars of the land will be crushed, and all who work for pay will be grieved. Judgment impacts everybody. The princes of Zoan, which is a big city up in the delta, are utterly foolish. The wisest counselors of Pharaoh give stupid counsel. How can you say to Pharaoh, "I'm a son of the wise, a son of ancient kings"? You know, putting out their CV, you know. I'm a smart guy because I got a lot of smart ancestors. How can you do that? Verse 12, where then are your wise men? Let them tell you that they might know what he who is of hosts has purposed against Egypt. So if they think they're so smart, let them pass on to you what I'm going to do. The princes of Zoan have become fools, and the princes of Memphis are deluded. Another one of the cities of Egypt along the Nile. Those who are the cornerstones of her tribes have made Egypt stagger. So this is judgment coming upon them for past actions of sin. He who is has mingled within her a spirit of confusion. That's part of the judgment because of all of the bad things that are going to happen. And they will make Egypt stagger in all its deeds as a drunken man staggers in his vomit. Wow, that's quite the word picture, isn't it? And there will be nothing for Egypt that head or tail, palm branch or reed may do. So when God's judgment comes, the Egyptians all up and down the Nile system can't do anything to save themselves. In that day, the Egyptians will be like women and tremble with fear before the hand that he who is of hosts shakes over them. And the land of Judah will become a terror to the Egyptians. Everyone to whom it is mentioned will fear because of the purpose that he who is of hosts has purposed against them. And so we're out of time pretty much today. So we'll have to come back to these couple of verses to talk about how the future will be flip-flopped, where Egypt is judged rather than Judah being judged.